This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Well-known environmentalists are fighting a dramatic expansion in the natural gas industry. The American president has just paused approval for a huge new liquid gas terminal near Louisiana. Intergovernmental agencies say cutting methane emissions is the first fast step to stop warming above 1.5 degrees C. But an Oxford professor calls it all a mass delusion and wishful thinking. What is going on here? Let's talk with Dr. Raymond Pierre Humbert. He is the Halley Professor of Physics at the University of Oxford, a lead author on the third assessment report of the IPCC, and a specialist in planetary climate dynamics. From Oxford, Professor Pierre Humbert, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Yes, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Why are you calling out this push to reduce a potent global warming gas thought to cause at least a third of warming?
Yeah, so first of all, with regard to the framing you had in your introduction of fight against liquid natural gas exports, one has to distinguish between the carbon dioxide you release by just burning the natural gas for home heating or whatever purposes, and the warming that's caused by leakage of methane as methane. And my statement refers to the sort of oversold idea that methane leakage is maybe the first order of business in terms of addressing the climate crisis. That's what I refer to as a kind of a mass delusion. And we can get into the reasons later. But the main reason for objecting to expansion of natural gas has nothing to do with the methane leakage. It's that natural gas is a fossil fuel. And while it emits less carbon per unit of energy produced than coal, it still emits carbon. And so we do need to eliminate our reliance on natural gas as well as all other fossil fuels. That's not in question. And that's not part of my mass dilution statement.
Common wisdom in climate circles, over a 20-year time span, methane is 80 times worse than carbon dioxide. In a presentation last July, you did list that as one of several methane myths. It's not?
Oh, no, that is one of the methane myths. But you haven't distinguished here between the methane leakage issue and just the fact that methane is a fossil fuel. The main issue with methane and natural gas is just that when you burn it, it releases carbon dioxide, just like when you burn fossil fuels. When you burn natural gas, the CO2 you produce does not have any more or less warming effect than any other CO2 you produce by burning fossil fuels. The question that's at issue with this really misleading 80 times figure is what happens when methane gets released as methane into the atmosphere.
And your fundamental point is kind of a brain cracker, and at first I did struggle with it. We should think of carbon dioxide as a stock, an amount accumulated, but methane as a flow. Can you help us understand that?
Yes, certainly. That is at the heart of it. And so to begin with, the most fundamental thing you have to understand about methane versus carbon dioxide is that carbon dioxide is removed from the atmosphere only extremely slowly by geological processes, by dissolution in the ocean, and ultimately by conversion into rocks, conversion into basically limestone that happens over geological periods of time, thousands and thousands of years. So that any carbon dioxide you put in the atmosphere stays there and continues, most of it stays there and continues to cause a great deal of warming over thousands of years. So, for example, if you were to stop emitting carbon dioxide completely, then the warming, however warmer you've made the atmosphere, you've made the climate at that time you stop, that's the temperature you're stuck with for the next 1,000 years, and it only goes down slightly over the next 10,000 years. And the corollary of that is that for carbon dioxide, as long as you continue emitting any amount of carbon dioxide, the carbon dioxide will accumulate to higher and higher levels in the atmosphere, and the Earth will continue to warm. So that's why we have to reach net zero carbon dioxide emissions. Now, methane, on the other hand, degrades in the atmosphere over a period of about 12 years. So if you emit some methane in the atmosphere and then you stop, the temperature more or less returns to normal in about 20 years. Not entirely, but that's a reasonable broad picture. So the amount of methane in the atmosphere, because methane does not accumulate in the atmosphere the way CO2 does, the amount of methane in the atmosphere depends on the rate of flow of methane into the atmosphere, not on the cumulative amount that you've put into the atmosphere over all times. Whereas carbon dioxide accumulates in the atmosphere like a poison accumulating in the fat of a fish swimming in mercury-laden waters, and it just keeps building up as long as you emit it. And so the stock of CO2 in the atmosphere depends on the entire cumulative emissions of carbon dioxide over all past time, whereas the amount of methane in the atmosphere, it depends on a rate. It depends on the rate of flow of methane into the atmosphere. And so you can't really, in any equitable way, any fair way, make a broad brush comparison of methane emissions with carbon dioxide emissions.
Well, does that mean that if methane increases and the rate increases, that's when the warming happens? Like if, let me put that a different way. The more carbon dioxide we add to the atmosphere, the more Earth warms for thousands of years, as you say. But you say warming from methane only increases if and when the rate of release into the atmosphere increases. Is that it?
That's exactly right. There's a certain amount of temperature change that's associated with a certain rate. So to put that in the context of sheep, which emit methane, a certain amount of methane per sheep each year, let's say that one sheep increased the temperature of the earth by one micro degree. Okay, that's not a real number, but let's just say for the sake of argument, one sheep increased living while it's living increases the temperature of the earth by one micro degree. Then as long as that one sheep is living, you have your one micro degree increase in the Earth's temperature, but it doesn't continue warming past that. If you have two sheep, then the amount of warming you live with from your two sheep is 2 micro degrees, and so on. 1,000 sheep, you get 1,000 micro degrees. Now, actually, I'm actually overestimating how much warming you get for each individual sheep, but that illustrates the general issue there, that it's the rate of emission that determines the warming you get. And so the amount of warming, which is what the ultimate measure of damage to the Earth is, the amount of warming depends on the rate of emission, whereas the damage to the Earth's climate from carbon dioxide depends on the total tonnage that's been emitted every year in the past up until today. And so the warming from CO2 accumulates as long as you continue emitting CO2. Whereas the warming from a given emission rate of methane stops increasing, essentially stops increasing after about 20 years. So next, if you'd like, we could get into just where the fallacy or the misleading nature of this 80 times worse than CO2 number is.
Well, I would like to do that, and I sense that this has to do with these global warming potentials. The numbers that have been assigned as the climate community has developed this whole subject, we have GWP, Global Warming Potential 100, or GWP 20. Where do those numbers come from?
These GWP numbers, these equivalents, they were meant to be a kind of currency conversion factor, just like you have a currency conversion factor between dollars and pounds or pesos and zlotys or whatever. The GWP's attempt to shoehorn a comparison of methane to CO2 into just a ton-for-ton equivalent. It says, for example, in the GWP 20 number, it says that 1 ton of methane emitted is equivalent to 80 tons of CO2 emitted. But we've just said that that's the wrong comparison. It doesn't tell you how much warming is caused by each emission. 1 ton of methane emission will cause a little blip in warming that decays after 20 years. 1 ton of CO2 emission will reset the climate essentially forever. So it's worse than comparing apples to oranges, because apples and oranges are both fruit. The GWP numbers are conversion factors that try to compare a certain tonnage of methane with a certain tonnage of CO2, which is the wrong pair of things to compare. What you really need to compare is a certain tonnage per year of methane with a certain absolute emitted tonnage of CO2. And so even the units of this conversion factor are wrong. And so the different numbers on GWP, GWP 20, GWP 100, they refer to how many years you average the effect of methane over when comparing to the effect of CO2 emitted over the same number of years. And you get lower equivalence the higher that number is. If you that number in the after GWP is GWP 1000 is a much lower number than GWP 100. GWP 100 is a much lower number than GWP 20. And people who seek to exaggerate the importance of methane control, and get me straight, I'm not saying methane control is unimportant. It's just not as important as some of the more rabid proponents say. Those who want to exaggerate the effect of methane and the importance of methane in the grand scheme of things gravitate towards these low numbers, like these low indices like GWP 20. But I should say that the GWP concept, this ton for ton equivalence, was introduced in the first IPCC report as just an example of the challenges of trying to compare one gas with another gas, a short-lived gas like methane to a long-lived gas like CO2. It was meant to be illustrative of one way to approach the problem, but the authors did not actually advocate it as the way the policy world should actually do the assessment. Nonetheless, it took on a life of its own, and it's been used as a kind of a sledgehammer by the people who are arguing for aggressive methane control for one reason or another to try to put that onto the front of the agenda, when what really needs to be on the front of the agenda is just getting the carbon dioxide emissions to net zero. Methane's a sideshow in that regard.
Yes, and we're going to talk more about that in just a minute. Now, in a 2020 paper you co-authored with John Lynch and Miles Allen and Michelle Kane about a possible fix, it seems to me, called GWP star. What is that?
Now, I said just before that the correct comparison between methane and CO2 is to equate a certain rate of emission of methane to a certain cumulative amount of CO2. And so GWP star is our factor that actually converts rate into tonnage. And it gives very different results for the importance of methane versus CO2, because it does take into account the fact that if you have a steady rate of emission of methane, that corresponds to just a steady temperature and doesn't cause the temperature to increase indefinitely.
I think people, including some scientists, are concerned even a short increase in methane emissions may stimulate other feedback loops or tipping points that aren't reversible. I mean, once we kickstart a forest die-off or burn it off or change an ocean current, it may not revert to its alternate state 20 years later when the methane has deteriorated. It may be thousands of years. Does that short-term impact worry you?
No, that's another fallacy, because the warming is still predominantly due to CO2, and so you're no more likely to trigger a tipping point by methane emissions than you are to trigger a tipping point by carbon dioxide, which is still the dominant influence on the climate. You're actually much more likely to trigger a tipping point by carbon dioxide, because what we know about a lot of these tipping points is that some of them take a long time to set in. They require warming to be high for a fairly extended period. So when you warm the climate by emitting carbon dioxide, then you reset the temperature to be higher for thousands of years. So that gives you a lot of time for that warming to trigger a tipping point. Whereas with methane, since you actually have the chance to dial it back down at some point in the future, you're much less likely to have as extended a period of warmth from that to trigger a tipping point. But we should get back at some point to just exactly what's wrong with this 80 times equivalent figure, because it does come down to the fact that a steady emission rate of methane doesn't cause a steady increase in warming. And we can talk through some examples of just exactly how that plays out.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Oxford Professor of Physics and Climate Specialist Raymond Pierre Humbert. We are talking about the myths and realities of methane. So would you expand on that? What is the problem with the 80 times?
So it's become absolutely the go-to statement in among journalists in newspapers. You see this, you know, in The Guardian and all over the place. It's become the go-to statement in any article about methane to say that methane is 80 times worse than carbon dioxide over a 20-year period. And sometimes they even leave out the qualification over a 20-year period. But even if you leave that qualification in, that 80 times figure is extremely misleading. And so what that leaves out is the fact that in the first 20 years, well, let's put some concrete numbers on it. The total world emission of methane by agriculture and fossil fuel leakage is estimated at something in round numbers like 300 million tons, 300 megatons per year of methane. And so in this 80 times equivalent, based on the GWP20, that would be equivalent to 24,000 megatons per year of carbon dioxide. Now, if you actually look at what happens if you emit that amount of carbon dioxide steadily versus if you emit that amount of methane steadily, what you find is that the two curves track. The amount of warming you get for the methane versus the CO2 based on that 80 times number, those two curves track for the first 15 years, roughly. So in that sense, for the first 15 years, the equivalence looks pretty good. But in that first 15 years, only a rather small amount of warming actually happens, you know, something like 0.2 degrees. And so past that time, past that first 15 years or so, the warming due to methane stops increasing. It's essentially flat, and it will stay essentially flat out to, you know, 1,000 or more years. But the warming due to the carbon dioxide, which is the supposedly equivalent emissions, past that 15 years, the warming due to the carbon dioxide keeps growing. By the end of 100 years, you've warmed the climate by about a degree. By the end of 200 years, you've warmed the climate by 2 degrees, just from that equivalent of the methane, the equivalent emission of CO2 to the methane emission based on GWP20. So the reason the 80 times over 20 years is a misleading figure is that, yes, that's true, but that only applies to the first 15 or 20 years. And after that, the methane warming stops. But the world doesn't come to an end after 15 or 20 years. The climate keeps on changing. The importance of methane versus CO2 is exaggerated by looking at the GWP20 equivalent. Because ultimately, the CO2 will always cause much more warming than the GWP equivalent emission of methane.
I get it. But when we add up all the energy and emissions from fracking in Texas to shipping and then methane burned in a UK electric power plant, do you think LNG is worse than just burning British coal in the first place?
Oh, LNG is way better than burning British coal, for sure. The only estimates that have ever been made that natural gas is worse than burning coal are based on, well, there are a number of flaws in some of the estimates, but the biggest flaw is using GWP20 equivalents. Because depending on what the estimates of methane leakage are from various fossil fuel productions, you know, maybe the statement worse than coal might be true if you were to think of just burning coal for 15 years and burning natural gas for 15 years, and then you stop both of them. But that's not how the energy systems work. We're talking about a steady supply of energy extending way beyond 15 years. And in that case, GWP20 greatly overestimates the warming that would be due to the methane leakage. And so between all the factors, it is a definite benefit to climate to switch from coal to natural gas. Part of that is that natural gas power plants are much more efficient at turning fossil fuel into energy than coal-fired power plants. And in addition, because of the chemical composition of methane, each kilogram of CO2 produced corresponds to a larger energy output than is the case for coal. So natural gas is doubly more efficient. But we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that methane, natural gas, is still a fossil fuel. And so you can get your emissions down by, say, half by switching from coal to natural gas, which is more or less what happened in the early days in the UK. But you can't get it down further. And if your energy usage continues to grow, before long, your methane CO2 will continue to grow with them. So that's why methane can have a limited use as a transitional fuel. But we need to stop using natural gas entirely in order to halt global warming. But it's not primarily because of the leakage. It's just because methane is still a fossil fuel and it still releases CO2. What we need to go to is heating homes, say in Britain or anywhere. What we need to go to is heating homes with heat pumps powered by renewable energy rather than heating homes by burning anything at all, whether it's methane or oil or whatever.
In a December 2023 article in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, you wrote, part of it is people don't realize how much warming we're in for due to carbon dioxide if we continue emitting the way we've been doing, and said methane is a drop in the bucket compared to that. Really?
Well, so yes, if you, as I said, even if you could eliminate all of the warming due to emissions of methane from fossil fuel production leakage and from agriculture, and that would be a really big ask, especially for agriculture, the amount of warming you would shave off might be something like a quarter of a degree. And that's nothing to sneeze at, but also that's if you really get rid of all the human-caused emissions. But it's something like a quarter degree. And that might look like a biggish number compared to, say, the 1.5 degree warming, which we're approaching pretty soon. But if we continue to emit carbon dioxide at anything like the rate we're doing now, we will blow way past 1.5. We'll go to 2 degrees. We'll go to 4 degrees of warming. And that amount of warming you could avoid by even very aggressive elimination of methane emissions. While it's nothing to sneeze at, it helps. It's still small potatoes compared to the amount of warming we're in for through continued emissions of CO2. And remember, again, if we develop technology to eliminate methane emissions 100 years from now, it still helps because that part of the climate damage will recover in 20 years or thereabouts. Whereas delaying action on carbon dioxide leads to an irreversible increase in the warming. So that's why these sort of sound bites you get based on how much warming from methane has happened so far, what proportion of the current warming is due to methane, they're not looking into where the big problems are coming in the future. And so that's why it's essential to do something to turn around CO2 emissions and get them heading towards zero as fast as we possibly can. You also have to take into account when people quote the amount of warming due to the methane increases in the atmosphere, that while we have good indications of how much methane has increased in the atmosphere over the past several hundred years, that doesn't tell us where that methane came from. Some of that methane is not actually a direct controllable result from human activities like agriculture or fossil fuel production. Some of that is actually a feedback that is caused by the warming of the planet, which then causes release of methane at accelerated rates from wetlands and perhaps permafrost and things like that. The part of the methane emission, the part of the methane increase that has been due to feedbacks like that, feedbacks on warming, that can only be controlled by halting warming. And the more warming we have, the more of those feedbacks we'll have. And ultimately, that warming will be increasingly dominated by carbon dioxide emissions.
And speaking of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, I believe you were part of the team that determined the doomsday clock should be set at 90 seconds to midnight. What is midnight? And is climate one of the reasons we hover in those last few seconds?
The doomsday clock was started in the wake of World War II and the atomic bomb development. It was started by atomic scientists involved in the Manhattan Project as a way of alerting the world to the risks of nuclear war. In later years, the climate risk was added to the kinds of existential risks, major risks to disruption of society that the doomsday clock measures. Since in the last two decades or so, we have factored in both the risk from climate disruption and the risk of nuclear war as primary factors in setting where the doomsday clock is set. We also track various other existential risks like biowarfare, cyber terrorism. And of course, we are aware of the discussions surrounding artificial intelligence, but those other things are still rather hard to quantify, especially artificial intelligence risks and cyber terrorism risks. So it's fair to say that the main ingredients in setting the doomsday clock are climate disruption and nuclear warfare. And they have both gone into our decision that although we're not advancing the doomsday clock closer to midnight, we are still frighteningly close to midnight. And circumstances do not give us, unfortunately, any justification for pulling it back further from midnight.
Ray, you've been swimming upstream on this methane question for quite a while. Myth or not, it is a powerful fear for a lot of people. But we've used up a lot of your valuable time. What is your parting message for listeners who want real climate action?
Yes, so if you want real climate action, you should keep your eyes on carbon dioxide. Now, I don't want to leave people with the impression that controlling methane emissions is unimportant. If you can control methane emissions without having that detract from efforts to control CO2 and get to net zero CO2, that's a good thing. And so things like regulations that force fossil fuel companies to not leak so much methane into the atmosphere, those are generally good. Those are low to no cost things, and it's hard to see any reason that they would actually get in the way of reducing CO2 emissions. But if too much of the political capital and too much of the public attention is focused on methane rather than CO2, then there's the risk that the efforts will disproportionately go to methane. So my parting shot is, yes, it's good to find low-cost or no-cost ways of reducing methane emissions, but still, that's not the main issue. It's carbon dioxide emissions. And the main thing is to get carbon dioxide emissions to zero as soon as we possibly can.
From Oxford, we have been speaking with Halley Professor of Physics at the University of Oxford, Dr. Raymond Pierre Humbert. You can find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Raymond, thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you very much. Very nice talking to you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org.
A U.S.